Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015. And with me today, I have my man of oh, I just totally blew that. Hey, John Martellaro, how are you?
International man of mystery, is that what you were thinking?
I'm not even sure where I was going with that. I'm just glad I was able to remember your name. It's good to have you here. Also have Adam Christensen from the MacCast here. How are you, Adam?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Other than my inability to complete sentences, I'm doing well.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
It's a podcaster's disease. It happens.
Yeah, and apparently today I am afflicted. So, hey, I thought we could start out today with the news that Google wants to start throw their hat into the ring for cell service providers. They're going to become an MVNO, which means mobile virtual network operator. So instead of building their own towers and antennas, they will buy time on other carriers' networks.
But, yeah, basically what Virgin America does, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what they're saying is that they think that they will use this as a way to experiment and try different features and possibly different pricing plans and come up with ways that they think that the market could be improved.
You know, I've had my doubts about some of Google's initiatives, but I like this one. I think this is the kind of thing Google's good at, the kind of thing that they could spend their money on that's worthwhile, could disrupt the marketplace and develop technology, push it forward. I think this is a great idea.
Well,
go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to say, this is something that when Apple first announced the original iPhone, that some speculated Apple might do, you know, set up an MVNO and sort of try and change all the issues that go on with cellular companies. And just so I don't get a bunch of emails, I meant Virgin Mobile, not Virgin America's, because Virgin America's the
Virgin
airline.
Mobile, that's right. And it would have been potentially cool if Apple had shaken up the market by creating their own MVNO. I totally get why they wouldn't want to get into that market, because no one seems to like their carrier.
Well, and that's the other thing about this is, like, there are a bunch of these MVNO type companies. A popular one for pay as you go is I'm going to blank on the one that we have.
One of them is. Well, is Cricket still around?
So there's a lot of these. There's a lot of these companies, and the thing is they're still the same cell networks as, you know. So they're just using time on AT&T or T-Mobile or whoever they choose to partner with. So you still tend to have a lot of the issues that the carriers have, and the challenges for running an MVNO for Google, or I think Apple probably looked at this as well, is, you know, you're still going to get blamed at the end of the day for maybe problems that aren't yours.
Right. And that's one of the reasons that I'm betting Apple chose not to go down that path. But for Google, while they will get some flack from subscribers, they're also in a position where they can brush a lot of that off, saying, look, we're doing this as an experimental service, just like when we work with companies to make our Nexus smartphones. This isn't our primary business. We're experimenting, and you get to be part of that.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great way to approach it. It kind of gets them off the hook a little bit for that blame you mentioned. It's experimental.
Yeah.
And there will be plenty of people that look at that and they'll be like, yeah, I'm totally cool with being part of this experiment. I know there's a lot of people that if they could get onto Google's fiber optic networks, they wouldn't even think twice about whatever personal data they may be giving up to do it. They would just go for it because of the speeds. So I could see where people would look at whatever service Google offers and say, yeah, I'm totally willing to give you guys a try. I'm sick of Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T, Sprint, whoever it is.
You know, I got to tell you guys, I've been very happy with AT&T as a parenthetical comment. They treated me well. The customer service has been good. They gave me a free microcell. I don't have any complaints. just as a comment.
You know, the funny thing is, John, I'm in the same boat as you. I have not had trouble with AT&T customer service. When I moved into Boulder and my cell signal tanked, which is not just an AT&T thing, the cell service in Boulder is just bad all the way around. I called them, and even though they weren't offering free microcells, they credited my account more than enough to cover the cost of a microcell.
Mm-hmm.
So I could go buy one.
Yep.
And it's been great. So some of us get lucky, and we do get good service from our cell service provider.
Either that, or they know they don't want to mess with us.
Either way, we're getting good service.
Yes.
And I'll take it. I mean, a lot of this too comes down to price, though, as well. So the company that I was thinking about that has gotten pretty popular is Straight Talk Wireless, which is a division of TracFone. And I think they have, I remember them having an unlimited plan, what they call their unlimited plan, for $45 a month. And it's month to month, and you get unlimited calling, unlimited texting, and what they're calling unlimited data, which is really the throttled data, right? You get, I think, 3 gigabytes, and then if you go over that, you're throttled down to, you know, slow speeds. So it's technically unlimited, but, you know,
it's painful.
Right, but it's sort of the same thing if you were to get that 2 or 3 gigabyte plan on AT&T or T-Mobile, because I think that's who they partnered with in this case. But the point is, you know, it's $45 for one phone, and you get all that. And if you tried to get that on any of the big carriers, you're not going to get that. Where it sort of falls apart for them pricing-wise is when you start adding multiple phones, because you don't get the added discounts, you know, of family plans and things like that. So it kind of depends on your situation. But I think a lot of the MVNO stuff is to kind of get around some of the higher pricing for people too.
Sure.
Right? Offer more flexibility, different options. So it's not all just about sort of getting away from, you know, the bad blood that people have with their carriers.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that Google may be looking at doing is setting up a plan where instead of paying a flat fee for your data, regardless of whether or not you use it, you pay for just what you do use, which I can see where that could be very compelling for a lot of people. Because if you're paying for, say, a 3 gig data plan,
right,
and you use maybe a gig a month, well, the rest of that data plan that you have paid for, it's just gone. It doesn't roll over to the next month, so you have more data. It's just gone.
Unless you're on what, T-Mobile, right? They started doing that.
Yeah, but it's kind of limited in the
it's
way.
It's weird, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and they take it away, and chances are you don't need that anyway. So, you know, that's the funny thing about rollover. It never really quite works, right? Because I have rollover on my talk, so I always have, you know, unlimited talk minutes. But guess what? I have unlimited talk minutes because I don't use the ones that I have every month. So they're always all rolling over.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. So you, just like you're saying, you're paying for a bunch of stuff that you're not using. So why not just pay for what you get?
Right. Yeah. And then in a case like me or John, we have a microcell. When you're connected to your microcell, that doesn't count against your minutes.
Right.
So that's like more free minutes. Yeah. So we pay for a lot of services that we're not actually using with our phones. So it would be kind of cool to see that change. And maybe having Google getting into this game will be the catalyst that we need to see these kinds of improvements happen. Because Google's in a position where it doesn't matter if their MVNO service makes money.
Right.
It just needs to be there so they can
do
it as they please.
Thinking the same thing. There's going to be some political fallout there where they buy time. They don't need to make money. They don't have to invest in upgrading all their thousands of cell towers to LTE and maintaining the infrastructure, so they can really get away with murder here in terms of setting an unrealistic standard for pricing. They may even get to the point where they, you know, give away data plans just to be disruptive and make their phones more attractive.
I would imagine the contracts that their partners are going to put together are going to be pretty restrictive or cautious if they're being smart. You know, if I'm AT&T or T-Mobile or whoever they're going to negotiate these deals, you know, I'm going to be very leery about what they can do and what they're up to, and you know, make sure that they can't do that kind of disruption.
So when somebody comes to you and says, I want to buy time on your network, you turn around and tell them you can't give away the data for free?
I don't know how their hands are tied. I don't know how the governmental regulations go surrounding these things.
That sounds onerous.
Well, I think there's controls. I think there's things that these companies can do and can't do when they're making these deals. I that's not a world that I live in.
Yeah.
But,
MVNO, tradition and regs. Yeah.
So anyhow, Google said that they will be making an announcement about their MVNO plans in the next few months. So until then, unless they decide to start throwing out information early, we don't know exactly what they're going to do. But we know it's coming, and it's a pretty safe bet that AT&T and Verizon, Sprint and T-Mobile are going to be watching very closely to see what Google has in store.
Yeah, and I think they'll be asking for a lot of money. I think, John, maybe that's the way, rather than it's regulations or restrictions, they probably just make the fees very high to Google.
Right. That sounds like a good idea.
So if they get undercut on the front end, they're making it back on the back end.
Reminds me of an old joke. A capitalist is someone who will sell you the rope you use to hang him.
Exactly.
Well, you have to make money somewhere. Yes. Okay, the other topic I wanted to take a look at today, and Adam, I'm glad you're here because I think you know a little bit more about this than I do. This news that's coming out about Apple Pay can be hacked and scammed.
Yeah, scammed is probably the more accurate terminology here because it has more to do with not the technology or the encryption or any of that sort of thing being hacked, more to this is identity theft being made easier or potentially easier for criminals via Apple Pay.
Now, the way this is working, is it really an Apple-specific issue, or is this like the way bank policies and procedures work that's causing the problem?
Right, yeah. So we should probably back up and explain what's going on. So what people have discovered is, if you've ever put your card into Apple Pay, the process is fairly straightforward and simple. You take your credit card out, you probably snap a picture of it, or you enter the credit card information, and then in some cases, it might go right into Apple Pay. In other cases, there are sometimes some validation checks, depending upon how the bank system has been set up. So there's going to be a callback to the bank. That's part of the Apple Pay process. There is a checks and balances there. I think with what I've read, and I haven't totally confirmed this, but I've read with like companies like Chase, if you already have the banking app on your phone, sort of the best way for this to work is you put the card in and then it requires you to log into the banking app on the phone to sort of validate your account. Right. And then it says, okay, yeah, you have access to this account because you know the login for the bank system and we can add this card to your Apple Pay. And some other banks, what they're choosing to do is sort of have a call-in checks and balances. So I think the way this works, I haven't had this experience personally, but you go to put the card in, it does some validation checks. And I've even heard they do some sophisticated things like they'll check the GPS data of where you are versus your bank, what the bank system is. And if they sort of see, they're at their zip code, which we have on file for their account, there's a little less onerous checks and balances. Or if you happen to be away from that location, they'll go, hey, this is kind of weird. They show that they live in California. They're entering this card in Florida. We need to, do some more security checks or some more checks and balances. And so they might have you call in or log into your account. There's different ways, I guess, they can set this up. And it's up to the bank to decide this process. And this is where the problem starts to come in. So some of the systems, you'll call in and they'll say, oh, can you verify, your address information? Can you verify the last four on your social? Can you answer the security questions we set up when we set up your account? And if you can validate those things, then you can get the card in. So where the problem is coming into play is the banks that have implemented that system. And I think they call this like a yellow path. And I think there's also like a green path, which is green path, I believe, is, if they have it tied into something like the app that's on your phone, right? That's like a more secure the banks can opt for this second tier check, which is what they call this yellow path. And that's where the problem seems to be coming in, is I call in, if I've stolen your identity, I probably have the last four of your social. I probably have your credit card information. I have your bank account number. I have your home address. I have your zip code. So I can now answer these questions to the person over the phone, and they happily go, okay, fine, you're good. Here's the passcode to let you add the card to Apple Pay. And now I have a, what for all intents and purposes, when I go up to terminal, is a copy of your credit card, right? And I don't need to. In the past, scammers, you know, if they did the skimming thing where they got the information off the magnetic strip, they'd have to buy costly equipment to create fake cards with holograms and things so that when they go into a retailer and swipe it, you know, they see the card. Or at least they have to do blanks and they still have to write to mag strips and stuff like that. So what Apple Pay is potentially enabling is making this easier for identity thieves to bypass the traditional checks and balances and actually get a card that they can use.
So in that sense, it doesn't matter if it's Apple Pay, if it's Android wallet,
right.
Google, whatever. This is something that scammers can take advantage of. But right now, the way it's set up with the way banks are interacting with Apple Pay, that's there you go. People now know how they can scam other people's credit cards through Apple Pay.
Yeah, yeah. And I even had this someone on my show come and bring this up because he mentioned, you know, hey, I was able to put my wife's credit card into my phone and it was kind of like no problem, right? So you could even have situations like that where it's not even a scammer, it's someone within a family, you know, a kid goes and gets the credit card and puts it into his phone and starts using it.
Oh, I can see where that could be equally funny and disastrous.
Right. Adam, but do you think this is going to launch a new phase of authentication now where the banks are going to shape up and change the way they authenticate?
Well, I think if they're smart and they don't want to deal with fraud, because the big thing for banks with Apple Pay is, right, one of the my understandings of the way Apple Pay works is it helps shift the liability that the credit card companies would normally assume for fraudulent charges back over to the banks, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's the tokenization and all that stuff. And that's why the credit card companies sort of like this. It's the same reason why the credit card, or why retailers like debit cards versus, you know, credit cards. They don't have to pay credit card fees and they don't have to deal with the fraud stuff, right? It falls sort of all back on the consumer and the bank.
Right. And I get why credit card companies... No, let me rephrase the way I'm saying that. I think what it comes down to for credit card companies is they're deciding how much fraud can they afford.
Right.
Because the easier they make credit cards to use, the more likely we will be to use them. So they have always accepted a very high level of fraud because that just goes along with making credit cards very convenient. So it looks like they've decided whatever level that is at, they don't want that anymore. So they're trying to scale it back. So they're still willing to accept some level of fraud. It's just what are they comfortable with? And as they become less comfortable, then we'll see changes take place, I think.
Yeah, but this is really a bank problem on the bank side, and I think financially it more hits the banks than the credit card companies. So I would imagine that what happened is banks, I didn't think this process through, and if they start seeing, you know, or assuming higher costs of fraud on their end, they're not going to be happy with that, and they're going to need to move to more of this green path kind of checking with these kinds of contactless payment systems that they're working with. And, you know, so I'm using contactless payments, so that could be an Android phone, that could be their new, you know, credit cards with their chips, whatever they're doing, right? They're going to have a better checks and balances on this thing. And I would imagine that if the banks don't, you know, sort of self-regulate, that Apple's going to have to get tighter about who they allow into their system and what their requirements are. You know, Apple might start to mandate and say, look, you can't do this yellow path checking because we know it's fraudulent, because that's going to come back on Apple as it is already, right? We're already seeing it because these stories are coming out. A lot of people are saying, well, Apple Pay is broken and hackable. And, you know, just from a PR perspective and from a marketing perspective, it's going to look bad for Apple. So I think in the early, you know, when they were early doing these deals, they wanted to make it as easy as possible for banks to opt in and participate, right? Because they want to gain traction for Apple Pay.
Sure.
But as it becomes popular and these stories come out, they may have to get tighter with saying, look, you, if you're going to be part of Apple Pay, then you have to have this bare minimum of checks and balances within your system. You know, sort of like they do in the credit card industry with the CVV2, whatever they call it, credit card verification system, mm-hmm. 2, right? The little number that's on the back. You know, implementing those sorts of higher checks and balances on people.
Yeah. Okay. So while yes, you can still scam the credit card system. It's something that potentially could be addressed. And it's not just Apple that needs to look at solutions. It's banks and other companies like Google that are offering NFC-based payment systems or solutions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's anytime you're trying to change a whole industry, you know, there's going to be this cat and mouse going on, right? We close up sort of one hole for the fraudsters and hackers and people to use, and they're going to go find another hole, you know. And it's never going to be done, but you just keep making it harder and more difficult.
All right. Well, so don't let people steal your iPhone.
Yeah.
And that's a good start. Yeah. Like we have so much control.
Well, don't let them steal your identity. You know, this is, again, more an identity theft problem.
Yeah, okay, that's a good
point. It's a whole another topic that we probably don't want to get into.
No, we don't, because we're out of time. So we'll have to leave identity theft for another day. Adam, thank you so much for being here and bringing all the information that you have about this whole Apple Pay thing. That was totally awesome.
Yes, Adam, welcome. That was great. Thank you.
Yeah, and John, thank you for being here with your fantastic insights, as usual.
As usual.
Yeah, it was great to have both of you here. Hey, I should remind everyone, I'm going to be speaking at the ACES conference in New Orleans, May 20th and 21st. So if you are an Apple consultant and you're looking for a conference where you're going to be able to get a lot of really great info about your profession, head on out. Also, New Orleans is a lot of fun, so there's that too. Thank you, everyone, for listening yet again today, and we will see everyone tomorrow.